I'm Tiffany. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is September 12th of 2006. Congratulations, Jen. This is my home group. I also have another home group on Friday nights, the women's meeting, TGIS. And some of the girls are here from that tonight. I don't know why I'm so nervous. This has never happened before. And I have a sponsor, and she's here, and she's speaking for me tonight. And I don't really know what to say right now, except, like, this year has been, like, the worst and best year of my life, and, like, better and worse than, like, the year I got sober. And, like, along with, like, the women in this home group and a bunch of other women that are sitting, like, right here in front of me, my sponsor is just, like, the most amazing woman I know, because, like, there was a time when I just couldn't. I was, like, broken, like, laying on her sofa with her and Mike, and, like, I don't know what to do anymore. Like, my will has not worked. Like, I just don't know what to do. And this woman, along with a lot of other women in here, just picked me back up again and, like, just showed me how Alcoholics Anonymous works and, like, what we do here, and just took the time. And, like, I don't even know where I would be. I know I wouldn't be sober. I know I wouldn't be here. And she's just, like, a living example, like, every day of how this program works. And I don't really know what else to say. I thought I was going to get up here and start crying, but I didn't. So please come up here, Melanie.
I'm gonna start crying. My name's Melanie. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, I'm gonna cry. What is this? Okay. Talk some of yourselves. No. My sobriety date is October 9th. Ah. 1987. So in about a week, 10 days, I'll have 24 years. And that's a friggin' miracle. I never came here thinking that I would be here at this amount. I mean, I'm 50. That's pretty unbelievable. I mean, I just, you know, sometimes, because I'll say to, like, a lot of the girls that I know in here and the guys, I'll be like, you know, they're our age. And they're like, yeah, no. not our age. Maybe your age. But, like, I forget, you know, that I'm old. Or older. But anyway, congratulations to all the celebrants. To Jen and to Tiffany, and to anybody new that's in here tonight, welcome to AA. I was thinking, you know, I was driving here, and I was like, God, I can't listen to myself anymore, you know? Because when you speak a lot, you know, you're just like, I know half of you, more than half of you, have heard my story, and I was like, well, what, you know, if God, what do you want me to talk about tonight? And I was thinking when I was sitting here, at 11 months, I relapsed. Where's Jen? 11 months, I relapsed, and a lot of other people in this room. And I smoked pot with a guy because, you know, he said, do you want to smoke some pot? And I had no defense, you know. I had no defense. There were no steps involved. There was a little God, but there's a ton of AA. I was going to a ton of meetings then, and it was really crazy. I mean, you know, every day I'd be like, 5 o'clock. Where is he? Where is he? Where is he? And deathly afraid of drinking, but you know, didn't pick up a drink, but, you know, smoked pot with him for about a week. Still going to meetings, talking to people about, well, it's pot. What do you think? I'd be like, what do you mean, what do you think? And do you think I need to pick up a white chip? And they'd be like, yeah. And so I did, and I remember calling my parents and telling them, because up until this point, I think it was the only thing consistently that I'd ever done right. Only they didn't really understand it, because they weren't really around for my drinking. There was a little bit in high school, but I left pretty young and didn't come back till I was sober in AA with a baby. That was a whole nother story. But anyway, so when I called to say I was in AA, they were like, you know, they thought I was a joiner. And so that I joined some other group, you know, and what's AA? They called it AAA for a while. But I was like, no, Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were like, oh, she's an alcoholic now. And didn't really believe it, didn't really get it. But when I came home to visit, there was clearly something wrong with me, because that's what happens when you take alcohol away from the alcoholic and they're not sober. They get pretty crazy and pretty sick. And they would ask me if I was on drugs when I was getting sober. Because I was just so out of it all the time and spacey and flaky and, you know, not a lot of impulse control. And I was either crying hysterically or laughing hysterically or punching holes in walls or, you know, I mean, I was just nuts. And so at 11 months, I had to call them and tell them that they did not have to fly, you know, I had this big idea in my head that they were going to fly down to see me get my chip. And there was going to, you know, there'd be this huge celebration. And not that we don't have huge celebrations for anniversaries, but I thought, you know, that they now were not going to deposit the large amounts of cash into my bank account, because I really thought I should be paid for being sober for 1 year. I don't know why, but I really thought, you know, I've done this well, you know, at 1 year I should be, you know, allowed to have money, because I know they have it, they've just been keeping it from me. And that was not the case. That was not the case. My mother said, wow, I'm really impressed about, you know, your honesty, how honest you're being with me. And I was like, really? So anyway, I went and I got a sponsor and another sponsor, because, you know, of course it might have been that sponsor's fault that I didn't stay sober, but it wasn't. And I got another sponsor and started really working the steps. So I guess, you know, I'll back up pretty quickly. I know this is going to fly by real fast, but I like to drink. I like to drink from the beginning. I mean, I didn't grow up in a family where drinking was at all around. My parents were, you know, very good Christian people. There was never liquor in our house. And I don't know if I got it from television or, you know, it just was always a very glamorous thing to me to be drinking. I remember Lori Spuncy was up here talking about being like Sue Ellen from Dynasty. That's kind of how it was for me. Like, I was so fascinated with the stemware, with the, you know, with the glasses, and my mother had, for whatever reason, we had a lot of that in our house because she'd inherited it a lot from her mother. So my mother would come home, I'd be drinking milk in a wine glass or, you know, iced tea in a rocks glass, and she'd be like, what are you doing, you know? So I was fascinated about it from the beginning and didn't really start drinking heavily until high school and just took off with it. Scared of people. Oh my God, you know, just like everybody says, afraid all the time. You know, you wouldn't know it because I was pretty much an extrovert on the outside, but on the inside I was really scared all the time and thought I was missing something, you know, like, I don't know, I've heard other speakers talk like there's a playbook and everybody's got it but me, you know, and they know what's coming next except me, and always felt sort of on the outside, even though I was kind of on the inside. It was weird. Went off to college, where I went to school, they had something called Wonderful Wednesdays, not at my school, but at the university in the same town where they didn't have school on Wednesdays. So there were all these specials on Wednesday, you know, like 4 for 1. And so you'd start drinking Tuesday night, and then you'd continue on Wednesday. And then, you know, if you're a good alcoholic, you keep going on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You know, I mean, I think Sunday and Monday were the only days I was recuperating. Stayed at school 1 year, had the opportunity to go to Washington, and I did. And in Washington, they drink a lot. Well, they drink a lot everywhere, but they, during that time, I was around people that drank a lot, and, you know, it was 2 martini lunch, only I wasn't drinking martinis, but, you know, that's kind of what it was famous for back then, and then happy hour every day, and then dinner, and then somehow I would stumble home and get to work the next day. By cab every single day. I lived right by the metro, but couldn't make it to, you know, get on the subway and get into my job. And I had a really, you know, for my age and for what it was, I was a White House intern for approximately 2 weeks when I found out they didn't pay and I needed money to drink. So I convinced the woman to get me a real job. And so I had a real job. I was working for a man who, it doesn't matter to you all. Anyway, I worked for a man there, and I was his scheduler, and and then when they lost the election, I came home, I moved to Tallahassee, and from Tallahassee, I worked for a representative there, and then I ended up in South Florida. And the only reason I tell you all this is because it was politics that kind of got me sober, because I was I think at a very young age, I was thrust into this life, this cocktail fundraiser life, where I was drinking all the time, and it was free. So, you know, when it's free, you know, how can you turn it down? I mean, and I mixed things, not a good idea. There was a lot of information I didn't know. Trial and error. You don't drink Bloody Marys and then drink champagne, you know, or I don't know. But I got sick a lot, and I blacked out a lot, and finally ended up in South Florida, and I was working for a congressman there, and in that office, there was a woman that was in AA. And she told me she was an AA, and I don't know why, but she felt the need to break her anonymity and tell me she was sober. And there were times when I would get mad at her, and I would gossip. This is my shtick, you know. I would gossip to the other people in the office, and I would say, you know, Bonnie, she's an alcoholic. She's an AA. And they go, yeah, yeah, okay. Well, when I hit my bottom in Key West, I woke up in Key West. I didn't know how I got there with, you know, a stranger. And apparently I'd been to Sloppy Joe's, and, you know, there were coasters all over my car. And I, you know, really was not a good night. And I'm driving back over those bridges, and I get back there were no cell phones then. There were no, you know, there was, you know, no way to communicate, really, because I didn't have any money. I put it all back in the gas tank, and I don't know why you need to know that. Anyway, I drove back to Fort Lauderdale, and I picked up the phone, and I called Bonnie, and I said, I think I need to go to one of those meetings. And she said, okay. And so she said, there's one tonight, and she came to pick me up, and all those people that I'd been gossiping to were in the back seat. And I said, you know, is this their first meeting too? And she said, no, you know. So that was fun. But it kind of went right over my head, you know. So I went to my first meeting in a treatment center in Hallandale, Florida. And I don't know. I walked in. And maybe God had it set up that way where I had to know people to get here for whatever reason. Because I don't think I'd be the time. I'm pretty argumentative. I was back then. If there had been an intervention, I might not be here. And so I walked in that room, and it just was like, I think you said it too, Esther, you know, just that, you know, like, oh, this is it. This is what's wrong with me. Because up until that point, I just thought I had incredibly, incredibly bad luck. And you know, I never made the connection, ever, 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 that alcohol made me put alcohol in me, and I could not predict what would happen. And it wouldn't be all the time, but most of the time. And so where I got sober, it was all old timers. And Bonnie was the closest in age to me, and she was 35. And then the next in age was like 55, and then 65, 75. I mean, you know, everybody was old. And so I was like the token young person. I was 22. And they were really sweet to me. They were really kind. And for whatever reason, I couldn't wait to get there. I loved the meetings. I had no problem going to meetings. I loved AA from the start. I did not have any problem with going to meetings. However, I did have a problem with taking direction. And so when I found Young People's a year later, 9 months later, I had a baby. And now I'm 9 months, you know, now I'm, you know, like 9 months later I have this baby and I don't know how to handle it. And so I come home, I come here. And because my parents had said, it's great you're having this baby, but, you know, don't come home till me after you have the baby. Because they didn't apparently want me pregnant walking around town explaining things. So I guess it was more explainable after you had a baby. But anyway, so I come home. I don't know. I come home with my son and proceeded to come to meetings here and in Tampa. And, you know, I was managing my life again. You know, I was really scared. I was really young. I'm a single parent. And that is not how I thought it was going to go. And so in my mind, I thought, well, you know, I'll be married by the time he's three. This is what I thought. And so that became a quest when I got home. And so I'm the girl in the meeting whose head is spinning at the, you know, anytime the door would open, my head would spin looking for Mr. Wright in here. And which is not the greatest gene pool to be picking from. I heard a speaker say once that, you know, alcoholics shouldn't breed, you know, because, and if you do, you better start saving for rehab. Just kidding. I have a, you know what, I love hearing babies in here. I do. I love it when you guys bring your kids, and because I had to do that, you know. I brought my son everywhere with me. At one point in church when he was about 3 or 4 years old, my mom had taken him, and after the Lord's Prayer, he stood up and yelled, "Keep coming back, it works if you work it." Yeah, with a husky voice, you know, like he had a cigarette in his mouth. Because you could smoke back then in meetings, you know. Yana used to could peel the paint, you know, the tar off the walls. It was so disgusting. And but anyway, I went to a lot of meetings here. I fell in love with AA here, and then I fell in love again, you know, and I followed some guy to Wisconsin. And Wisconsin was a mistake. And I guess that's kind of what I want to talk about. In the beginning, it was a mistake, and it was kind of like getting sober. I was running my life, chasing this man, because I thought that was the answer. And I moved to Wisconsin, and it did not work out. And some of the women in here know why, because they go to my home group on Friday nights. He had some issues. And anyway, so it did not work out, and but I stayed. My son loved it there. I found a career there. My brother ended up marrying my sister-in-law there. My brother from here met a woman there and married her, and they live there now. I mean, there was so much opportunity there, and I got involved in a group, starting a group with Mike. And he was, I thought he was really cute. And he was saying, you know, come get involved with this group. We're going to start this group. We want you to be a part of this group. And so I did. And they were probably more sober than me, his group and his line of sponsorship. And I kind of would show up at these meetings because I felt like for a long time I believed that if you came into AA, the seed was planted, kind of Zen-like or something. I don't know. Like, if you came here and you left, you'd come back. And after being here a while, I realized that is not always the case. People die here. this is a serious disease, and somebody, you know, I don't really hear too often about people dying from actual alcoholism, you know, a lot of overdoses, but recently I heard of a girl, you know, that had come to this meeting that had died from detoxing in a hotel room from alcohol and other substances. So it happens. And they would start, you know, reading out of the book or, you know, quoting out of the book or saying stuff that I'd never heard. So I would race home and get out my book and try to find it because it was, I was showing up to protect the newcomers because I thought they were going to get sucked into this vortex of Nazi AA. And what ended up happening was I got sucked into the vortex. I wouldn't say it's Nazi AA. That's a bad word. I'll get yelled at later for that. But a more serious version of AA. And what happened was my life started getting better. I started taking it more seriously. I started realizing that the steps, the things that I had, you know, there were parts that I had missed. I don't know how, but there were parts that I had missed, you know. Because I think you gravitate to a sponsor that you're at. Like, if you're not serious, you're going to gravitate to somebody that's not serious. And if you're serious, you're going to gravitate to somebody that's really got it going on. And, or, you know, wherever you're at in AA. So I was always sort of gravitating toward the artsy-fartsy types that would, you know, flow in and flow out. And really just did meetings, and we'd wave at each other, and nothing was really going on. And I'd get jammed up, and they'd be like, yeah, that sucks. You know, there'd be, like, no solution. And so anyway, like, I realized how much of the first part, or in the first step, that second part, how I was managing my own life. For years and years and years, I thought it was about what I did when I was drinking. Like, when I got drunk, I puked on their carpet. You know, like, I thought that was unmanageability. I didn't understand that it was my thinking. I didn't understand that my solutions were worse than my problems when I'm in my alcoholism. So spent a lot of time on that. And then the second step, you know, like, it's funny, I sponsor a few women, and some of them are new and some of them are not. And the ones that aren't new, when they come to me, you know, they'll be like, oh, I want to go through steps, I want to go through steps. And we get to step two, and there, for me, it was not a conversation. I really had to come to believe in something. I had to come to believe that my way didn't work, that me managing my own life in my character defects was killing me. And until I realized that and said, surrender, you know, uncle, I didn't get better. And so I have kind of a lot of work, you know, that I learned from my sponsors over the years, you know, that they had me do that I pass on to them. And they're like, what? You know, like, step two, what do you mean? You know, and but it's been the most amazing thing to watch people come to believe in a higher power, come to find a God of their own understanding. It just, it's the most touching thing you will ever see. And today, for instance, I had a girl call me that, you know, like, I didn't think she was going to make it, and she's almost got 2 years, and she's got her first sponsee that stuck. She had two that kind of, you know, went away, but this is the first one that stuck, and she called me, and she goes, oh, my God, it's the most amazing experience. I'm like, yeah. And I said, you know, like, what I've learned and what I've heard over the years from the different people that have worked with me is that, especially my new sponsor, says that the most she learned about herself was, yeah, it was in the steps, but it was also with working with other women. You know, that's where I came to really find out who I was. So I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and the longer I stay here, the more I have come to believe that I need it more now than I ever needed it. And, you know, that I'm lucky to still be here. I'm blessed. It's the grace of God that I'm still here because, believe me, I did not do everything right. And And that's not to say that you should not try to do everything right when you're here, like, oh, I have time to get better. Because I think, you know, I think that's what was going on in my head for a long time, like, oh, yeah, like, I'll get to that. As long as I'm coming to meetings, I'm all right. So I started taking it more seriously, and when I did, I got better. And I don't know, I love this group. I love young people in AA. I love that you get to come here so young and start your lives over. It's such an early age, and who knows, you know, who knows what God has in store for all of you. Tiffany, it has been such a joy working with you. Why are you laughing? I will say she calls the most of anybody. And it's been a real honor and a real joy to see you, I don't know, blossom, I guess. I don't know. It's just, I don't know any other word for it. But thank you guys thank you for asking me to speak. And thank you for my sobriety.
Not Dave. Josh, alcoholic. Josh. This is Dr. Bob's last message, delivered at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this, with the feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all have the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength has not returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it all up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words, love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is, so let's bear those 2 things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member, the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing, none of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.